Good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Laurent Landis has the day off. Our guests today are the defendants, the plaintiffs. They were kind of the defendants in the appeals court, but in the district court, they were the plaintiffs. Plaintiffs in the Texas marriage case, Vic Holmes, Mark Ferris. Welcome.
Thank you.
And you're just one of two couples, because there's also a couple in Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Cleo and Nicole are out of Austin.
Right. And we're going to have them on the show in the coming weeks,
And the case got named after them. How'd that happen?
Alphabetically.
Oh.
It's all alphabetical.
No. Well, wait, I just have a quick question, then. Yeah. What happens now? Is it still going to be styled De Leon versus Perry, or is it going to be De Leon versus Abbott?
I think it always keeps the same name, doesn't it?
Keeps the same.
Okay, that's even better, actually.
So, what I wanted to know first, you know, we've talked about the case, where it's going, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that from your perspective. You know, let's say you're a radical extremist with a gay agenda, and you want to destroy marriage as it's existed since at least the 1970s, right? Because it hasn't changed much at all since then, but it has changed before then. So how do you go about suing the state? They're looking at me because in the other room, I didn't quite ask them the question that way.
Well, how do we go about suing the state? It's a good question. Windsor was issued and decided by the Supreme Court in June of 2013, mm-hmm. at the end of June. The following week, a longtime friend of mine, Frank Stinger, then the Assistant General Counsel for Akin Gump.
An awesome place.
An awesome law firm. Called me and we were talking, and after Windsor, and we were ecstatic by the decision, and then through the process said, well, you know, I think someone needs to sue the state, but we've got to find a law firm that will take this on. And as we chat, Frank said, well, I wonder if my law firm will do that. And so essentially we motivated him to go and talk to his law firm. He did. He talked to Barry Chasnoff, the head of the San Antonio office, who's also on the executive committee for Akin Gump. And it, conveniently, he was meeting the following week with the management committee in D.C. So he said he'd bring that up at the management committee meeting. He did. They agreed to take it, and he came back the very next day, went into Frank Stinger's office and said, Akin Gump will take the lawsuit, now go find me some plaintiffs. And Frank called me promptly and said, the firm will take it. This is a week later. The firm will take the case, do you know of any plaintiffs? And by the way, we'd like one with plaintiffs that have a veteran as a part of the couple. Well, Vic, you know, happens to be a veteran of 22 and a half years, so it didn't, fly over my head that maybe they were asking us. So anyway, I told him I was at work, I'd think about it, get back to him the next day with some suggestions, went home, talked to Vic, and we talked about us as well as who else might be willing to do that. And I called Frank the next day and said, we're in, and here's some other names.
Now, there's more to it, though, than just, hey, we'll do it. You have jobs. You have no job protection from the state. Doing something high profile like that could be seen as a distraction by your companies?
A bit, yeah. Well, we had talked with our employers because before we even really talked to Frank, I suppose, but at least before we committed to it, we spoke with them about the issue. Is this something that we need to worry about in terms of staying employed? Is this, you know, we don't want to put the companies that we work for in any kind of jeopardy themselves.
Right.
So we spoke with them about that just to make sure that they were okay with it. And from both of our employers, the biggest concern that both of our employers had was actually about our safety.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something we were concerned about too, but it was nice that they were concerned more about that than, you know, well, all the other legalities that go with it. And I think that speaks highly of our employers for a start, but also it really helped us to know that people were, they're there for us. They're, you know, the support is there.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to make sure that we're staying safe at the same time.
You know, we had all kinds of visions. For example, of Westboro Baptist Church picketing out in front of our house. And, you know, the interesting thing is that's not so fictional or imagined. After Judge Garcia issued his decision in February of 2014...
And that's the U.S. District Court ruling
in San Antonio, right?
That originally declared the Texas marriage law unconstitutional.
Correct. After he issued his decision, his house was picketed, not mm-hmm. by Westboro, but by others. So mm-hmm. it was not unreasonable for us yeah. to fear that. And I
but you live in Plano. Plano's a city that accepts non-discrimination. And some of your largest churches are backing non-discrimination, aren't they?
Not so much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Although it is true that the citizens of Plano are, on the whole, non-discriminating. The reason that they updated that policy was because the majority of the citizens were really behind the concept of everybody being equal, of equality for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's only a small segment that felt otherwise.
And at least that's what we think, that's what we hope. We hope that's the outcome of the effort to repeal the non-discrimination ordinance in Plano. I can say that from Vic's and my perspective of living in Plano, when we first moved there in 2002, we were a little nervous about whether we were moving into an area that would be accepting of us, whether our dogs, we have wonderful beagles, might be at risk. And we've had no issues in that vein. Mm-hmm. We worried after we filed the lawsuit whether our house would be egged. We mm-hmm. implemented all kinds of security arrangements to make sure that we were protected, including having a dog sitter be at our house for a week after any major publicity.
So, you know, partially this is just like with the Windsor case. One of the reasons it was the right case was she could afford to pay $265,000 worth of taxes and then hire an attorney and turn around and sue and wait several years till she gets her money back.
Were those taxes in New York?
They yeah. were in New York and they were federal taxes yeah. as well.
But the
New York taxes she's still fighting with.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I think Robbie Kaplan, who is the attorney for Edie Windsor, did it on a pro bono basis. I don't think she charged.
Yeah. But still, she was able to pay those taxes right. in order to then go forward with the
that's
case.
True.
You're saying the same thing, that in order to sue the state on something like this, you have to be in a position where your employer supports you, where your neighbors are not going to burn your house down when
right.
you go to work, where you can afford the security that you need in order to do this.
I think that's a very fair point. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we were very fortunate to have contacts in the legal community to have a law firm that would step up to the plate because they themselves were taking a risk.
And an amazing law firm at that. Mm-hmm.
And they're pro bono, right?
They're pro bono.
That's
and
awesome.
So far,
that's
they've
amazing.
Incurred a little over $1.5 million on our behalf.
Wow.
And so that's an incredible contribution. And obviously, Vic and I could not have afforded that.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I'm not talking... So you don't have to be ridiculously wealthy in order to sue, but you do have to be in a position where you have that support around you. You have to have the support around
you. And when we first started this, the whole issue of security, we were worried about it, but one of the things that we thought that we would do to try and minimize that would be to stay out of the public mm-hmm. eye, if you will. We really didn't want the publicity. In fact, when we talked to them about it initially, we were pretty specific. And if any kind of publicity issues come up, if there's any questions, then just it'll be funneled to the lawyers. The lawyers mm-hmm. will take care of the questions and such. But pretty much the first day out, the world has a way of finding you.
Mm-hmm.
And so first they found Mark, and then they found us, and the publicity kind of throw in there. But the reason that we didn't really want the publicity was because we do live in a small place. We live in a residential area. There are kids playing in the streets. We don't want all kinds of craziness happening outside where it put them in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a serious consideration in terms of security, not just for us, but for the people that are around
right.
us.
Yeah, we went through great lengths. We took our... on Facebook, we took the photos of us off as our profile pic so no one could mm-hmm. associate a photo with us. We took them off of our LinkedIn pages. I took my phone number off of the Texas State Bar page. You know, I went to great lengths. And the day we
internetted ourselves.
Yeah, to the extent you could, we tried. And then the day we filed, I was sitting in my office working, and my phone started ringing. And I had Texas Public Radio wanting to interview me, and I'm wondering,
we weren't
how
first?
Did you get my phone number?
We weren't first?
Yeah. and then next
because
I had
to... Because of call waiting.
Yeah, I have the San Antonio Express News. You know, I mean, it was literally, I went home that night so nervous.
Sick.
Yeah, I was sick. I was physically sick.
Wow. That's amazing.
And, well, when we started this process, we did, in fact, say, yes, we'll do this. But then there were some considerations about office safety, et cetera. And you kind of get cold feet. And so we kind of wavered a bit back and forth. And then finally, we just, this has got to be done. Let's do this thing.
And you're saying it's got to be done. The major gay and lesbian firms... groups like Lambda Legal, their advice really was, first of all, everybody thought it would be a longer timeline.
Right.
So their advice really was...
I didn't think I'd even be alive, frankly.
those who were calling the odds, what's his name, from the New York Times, formerly from the New York Times, who said 2018 would be the year.
Really?
Oh, Nate Silver.
Nate Silver.
Nate Silver,
wow,
predicted Texas would have marriage equality in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, even Texans wouldn't have said that.
Right.
Yeah. And it was Nate Silver. I mean, he's called how many elections? Spot on.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
Senate races, presidential.
I need that crystal ball for the lottery now.
Yeah.
So like Lambda Legal, other groups like that were saying, let's work on the ones that we, you know, the low-hanging fruit. Let's get Minnesota. Let's...
Right.
You know, if California, let's get the other two West Coast states and Hawaii. And
absolutely.
So that was their advice. You disagreed that we needed to wait.
Because we live here.
Well, and also I think if you read the Windsor decision,
mm-hmm,
and both Frank Stinger and I are both lawyers, and we both had read the decision, and I mean, it is just so crystal clear that it talks about the dignity,
right,
of gays and lesbians, and the conclusion was that it's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause and a violation of due process for the federal government to discriminate on the basis of same-sex marriages. So when you read that decision, you know that it's pretty clear what the Supreme Court was saying. It was pretty clear that these laws were unconstitutional at the state level. You cannot have laws be unconstitutional at the federal level under the Equal Protection Clause and under the Due Process Clause and then be legal under those very same clauses at the state level. So knowing that, we knew it's the time to proceed. And Vic and I have been together 17-plus years.
Congratulations.
We've never had a fight. Although his driving has driven us close.
Stop. Sorry,
maybe we'll have it today.
Taxi driver.
But I do that too. I'm with you, Mark.
I mean, we love each other, and you know, we did want to marry, and so we found a law firm, an excellent law firm with a great reputation, Akin Gump, who's willing to represent us, and there's really no reason not to proceed when it's in a federal court and you're applying federal law.
Right.
You might as well proceed. And I've heard people say, well, you're in Texas. I mean, you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not before a Texas state judge. I'm not before the Texas legislature. I'm not dealing with elected officials. I'm dealing with the unelected, term for life federal judges, and the brilliance of our founding fathers set up the Constitution in a way so that the judiciary could be taken away from those kind of majority pressures in ruling on their decisions. And that's why we went to the federal court, and that's why we won.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that back in 2004 or 5, something like that, there was an amendment to the Texas Constitution which was pretty damaging in terms of gay rights.
2005. I remember it well.
But
Hattie was campaigning for that amendment.
Real hard. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted Dallas County, the whole of Dallas County to vote for it. Not.
The problem with that is that you absolutely cannot vote away someone's civil rights. That is just, I mean, it's laughable anyway. But to vote away someone's civil rights and then say, well, you can't have that because we voted it away.
Well, we can have that, and we do right now.
Well, and in fact, the attorney at the Fifth Circuit who argued on behalf of the state of Mississippi tried to say that what we're dealing with is a social policy, not constitutional rights.
Well, because that's the only way you get away with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's like to get around it. And that's when, of course, the whole thing turned on him, when the Higginbotham said, you know, those words, will Mississippi to change its mind, have resonated in these halls before.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Ouch,
right.
You know, bam. Because it was quite telling in the courtroom.
Now, one thing interesting happened on Friday. Alabama's marriage law was declared unconstitutional.
Alabama.
That leaves North Dakota, Nebraska, Georgia, and part of Missouri without a decision on marriage equality.
Part of Missouri.
Because Missouri had these strange decisions. One decision said that the state had to recognize out-of-state marriages, and another decision said St. Louis had to issue marriage licenses. So that's where it stands now in Missouri. It's not a marriage equality state, but St. Louis is a marriage equality city.
It is.
And
Kansas City, too.
No. Oh, Kansas City.
Their marriage licenses are being issued in both St. Louis County and Kansas City. The clerk or whomever it is that issues those in Kansas City is issuing them, even though there wasn't necessarily a decision.
The ruling did not mention them, yeah.
It's a goofy place, too, because you could have issued, a state can issue a marriage license and it not be recognized in its own state.
Mm-hmm. No, it has to be recognized because of the other decision. It will be recognized.
Well, I think there's some movement in North Dakota, but it's such a daily. Remember, there was about 2 weeks where in there not long ago where it was like boom, 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 boom.
Here's what I think is interesting about the Alabama decision. You would expect the same sort of stuff that the states that Mississippi and Texas and Louisiana were arguing, the same sort of, how can we describe it, crap, that they were talking about to come from the Attorney General in Mississippi. All he said was, in asking for a stay, he wasn't talking about people marrying their horses like in Mississippi. He wasn't talking about, you know, we have to pay people to have sex like in Louisiana or wherever that was. All he said was, the Supreme Court is going to be ruling on this later this year. Can we have a stay that will abide by the Supreme Court decision? Right. It wasn't hateful. It was just very legal. I respect him for that.
Well,
we'd like to have it sooner.
Right. That was going to be my comment was, you know, I certainly find that to be a more plausible argument than some of the other ones that have been advanced. Nevertheless, a federal judge has now ruled that Alabama's ban is unconstitutional, and that Alabama judge, by the way, was a George W. Bush appointee.
Mm-hmm.
And that every day they're denied their ability to marry someone could die. For example, I'll just throw this out. I got an email yesterday from a friend of mine who had a longtime friend that was killed in a pedestrian was hit by a bus, and they had been together, and that the deceased and his partner had been together for more than 30 years, and now they can never get married.
Yeah.
So the harm of delay is not imaginary; it's real, and it is appalling to me. No matter how nice you paint these arguments, it's appalling to me that people are okay, or some judges are okay, with the concept of staying the granting of my constitutional rights. Once it's so clear.
And the Ohio cases were all about couples where one of the partners was about to die,
right,
and did. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and we'll be back with more right after this.
I'm Christina from the Orange, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. See you later.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and our guests today are Vic Holmes and Mark Farris. They are the plaintiffs in the Texas marriage case. They defended after the state lost. They were the defendants, basically, the appellees. not the orangees or the peachies. They were the appleys.
No, he's pretty peachy.
He is peachy. But so they were the defendants, basically, before the Fifth Circuit. And now we're waiting for the Supreme Court to rule. But let's just talk about a little bit about the Fifth Circuit. How peculiar is that to be sitting there and know that they're discussing you and your relationship? They're really not, but
they are. And to back that up just a shade, when we were in San Antonio before Judge Garcia... There we go. Yep. Sorry, when we were in San Antonio before Judge Garcia, Neil Lane was at the pulpit podium speaking
lectern.
On
yeah. lectern,
the big thing where he stands. He was there speaking about our harms, I guess, the things that we had to go through, that we had to endure just to get through the day where married people don't, mm-hmm. the things that they get versus what we don't. And it was really, to me, particularly telling that as he was saying these things, at first it was like he was describing somebody else. He was describing someone else's life. And all the things that he was saying just sounded so incredibly appalling that anybody would put up with that. And I think it was probably about the third item through that it hit me that he was describing me. He was describing Mark. He was describing Cleo, Nicole. He was describing our lives and what we had to go through just to be going through our lives like everybody else. And to hear it again at the Fifth Circuit and to hear some of the rationale as to why the states felt that we shouldn't be treated the same way as everybody else. It's indescribable the kind of emotion that really goes through your head, but I think the tears coming on the side of my eyeballs were pretty telling of it.
Yeah, we were both fairly weepy,
yeah.
Sitting there listening, and even at the Fifth Circuit when I heard Neil Lane point out that if something happened to me, Vic wouldn't be able to be listed as my spouse or my partner, and he's not my spouse yet, hope to be spouse, wouldn't be able to be listed on my death certificate. And that was, again, incredibly moving, because what is at stake is not some theoretical legal principles. It's a real circumstance for hundreds of thousands of gay and lesbian citizens in the state of Texas, and of course before the Fifth Circuit it was those in Mississippi and those in Louisiana as well. And somehow or another, the one thing that I took from listening to the Fifth Circuit arguments, listening to it, it was almost as if they had divorced that fact from the discussion. And the only one, and I applaud Neil Lane, our attorney, for this. The only one who really made it personal, that it was about real people that they were talking about, mm-hmm. was Neil in his opening opening mm-hmm. arguments.
Yeah. And I have to say...
Go ahead.
All
right. When he said that if anyone is actually trying to redefine marriage, it was the other folks, the states that were currently pressing their cases. That was a very telling point, because we've never tried to redefine marriage. Marriage has always been about two people who love each other. Two people who love each other and are committed to each other and want to spend the rest of their lives with each other. That is what a marriage is. And to hear the state say that, well, no, it's not actually about subsidies, and it's really, marriages don't really have so much to do with love as, you know, there's all these benefits you get, and that's really what it is.
Well, what they were describing, because they like to talk about traditional marriage, and I think some of these idiots believe this, is that marriages are arranged. It has nothing to do with love. I remember my grandfather talking about when he was, he's from an area that was Poland then, but it's in the Ukraine now. And he remembered going to this wedding, and the groom was there, and the bride was there in a veil, and when she opened the veil, it was a different person than he had been promised.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, and this isn't that long ago. This is like late 1800s, like the late 1890s.
Can marriage I get Matt
has,
Damon?
Yeah. Marriage has changed. That's what marriage
You
was.
Might be having your first fight.
You're going to need an orthopedic surgeon before you get Matt Damon.
But that's what marriage was. And when I was joking with the first question and saying you're trying to destroy marriages as it's existed since the 1970s, until the 1970s, women couldn't take out a mortgage on their own. Right. Women couldn't have a credit card on their own. They had to have their husband approve it for them and sign for it for them. Marriage has changed. It's changed. It hasn't changed much since the 1970s, but it has been evolving all the time.
But what's really crazy to me is not only the arguments, but, well, for one, it just made it so real for me sitting through that, and I was sitting in the press section. It's a very small courtroom in terms of mm-hmm. the gallery. Mm-hmm. But as Louisiana was gearing up, it was the first case of the morning, and there were two pews full of plaintiffs, you know, like and people with the case, and I was I just teared up because it was so moving to me, because it was so real for mm-hmm. them. And then in came Mississippi, and of course all these women and their kids, and it mm-hmm. was just it was a joyful place to be. And as they talked about their lives, it just seemed so incongruous. And then you guys came in for Texas, and you know, you guys looked so dignified and stunning. I mean, Vic, in your uniform, your full-dress uniform, it was just amazing. And then,
Josh,
Nicole...
it is such a good thing that Aaron and Patty weren't the defendants.
Well, I just want to note, though. I just want to note, though.
Oh, my goodness.
It was just stunning that you were in your uniform, and you were just... You look just fabulous, Mark.
He's fabulous.
And he does. He does. He's a handsome man. And that coat was just amazing. We could spot you my way. And then and then Cleo and Nicole. And Nicole was clearly pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the state of Texas, you know, Solicitor General up there saying gay people can't procreate. And the state of Texas wants you to procreate. You're like, hello.
Well, not only that, but Cleo and Nicole, when they had decided to have their first child, they got married first with that intent. They got married specifically so that then they could start planning their family around that. Mm-hmm. So I can't.
Which is the way, you know?
Right. I can't
the
see a better
you're
example
say we should
of
do
responsible
it.
Okay. Parenting and responsible marriage.
Okay, so we have a case going to the Supreme Court. It's four states going from all of them from the Fourth Circuit: Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky and Tennessee.
Six,
the Michigan case, but six cases. The
four.
Michigan case, it's six.
Four,
there
six.
There are two Kentucky or two Tennessees, and there are two Ohio cases.
Right, but yeah. But they're all coming from the Sixth Circuit.
Yeah. The Michigan case, Michigan argued that marriage, we have marriage that's opposite sex marriage to protect children. And one of the Michigan couples has adopted, not just adopted children, but adopted special needs children. And in that state, they can't both adopt them because they're not married.
Right. Yes, they
How is that protecting children?
I mean, that's a very good argument. And the Michigan case is a great case to be before the Supreme mm-hmm. Court because of who the plaintiffs are, and also because they had a full trial on the merits with some findings of fact where the judge said that Regnera's study was so laughable.
This is the one out of UT.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's been debunked. And
right. Exactly. Over and over
and
again.
Exactly.
But this was the legal debunking of it.
It was the legal debunking. It was a fantastic, it's a fantastic case. The plaintiffs are two females who want to marry in order to, both of them have adopted two special needs children, and they want to be able to be the parent on the other special needs children so that if something happens to one of them,
right.
Those children are not left as orphans, which, by the way,
again.
Is if something did happen to them, which is, by the way, the same concern that Nicole and Cleo have about the need for recognition of their marriage, mm-hmm. Their out-of-state marriage. Because if Nicole, who's having a child right now, if something happens to her before they can get Cleo through the legal process added onto that birth certificate, that no. child will be an orphan.
A legal orphan.
A legal yeah. orphan. And that is so unbelievably harmful to kids. And anyone who's been around Cleo and Nicole long enough know that those two are just spectacular parents. Yep. And those kids, are both of them, are lucky to have them as parents. And which is why, and I'm going to circle now back to the issue that we talked about earlier when you raised the stay from Alabama or the decision out of Alabama and that the Alabama's being polite and saying they just wait till the Supreme Court rules. Well, that's 4 or 5 months, and it could be even longer. It could go into next term. The idea that you would suggest that kids would be legal orphans for months and call that argument even remotely plausible is to me, it's amazing. It's so mean-spirited.
And this shows just how obnoxious and mean this whole debate has been, because if we can say, okay, so at least all he's saying is let's just wait till June, and he's not really denigrating these people, and he's not talking about what horrible people they are, and they're destroying my marriage and destroying the state and all kinds of ridiculous, idiotic arguments.
And it's so arrogant.
It was just a very simple, we're going to ask the Supreme Court for a stay until we have their decision.
Well, here's my argument back to that. If I don't know the name of the person who
made that argument. I can't think of what his name is.
But let's suggest that he has somehow or another offended the powers that be in Alabama, and he's placed under house arrest. He cannot leave his house, mm-hmm. period. For some kind of political speech, that would clearly be a violation of our Constitution. And now let's assume that we take months that while he's under house mm-hmm. arrest, we take months to determine whether or not to first have a hearing on it, then to get a decision out of it, and then once you get a decision on it that says yes, there's been a violation of our mm-hmm. constitutional rights. Now then, the powers that be come back and say, I tell you what, let's not let that decision go into effect for 4 to 5 months. Let's let that person stay under house arrest, unable to leave his house for the next 5 months. My question to him is, how are you going to like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really.
And I completely agree with you. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying the Attorney General from Alabama didn't say anything nasty about us.
Right. We didn't have to. I mean, honestly, I understand.
Well,
that it's
Greg Abbott didn't have to say anything nasty about us either. But he did.
With Alabama, I agree that it's respectable that he didn't throw out any kind of weird, mm-hmm. odd science or mm-hmm. any of those strange studies or mean-spirited specific comments. But the fact of the comment is still, mm-hmm. in itself, something that's harmful.
It's almost like we're not even human. Mm-hmm. You know,
we're
I mean, they're
real.
Just talking about us, or that we're subhuman, mm-hmm. exactly. like those
well,
people.
Well, we're numbers on paper until yeah. we're real people, and that was...
And even with real people in the courtroom, and I just say, it was a blessing these guys had their backs to the plaintiffs, because if they had to say that stuff to their face, I'm not even sure they could get through it.
Right.
Honestly, because you're sitting here with very real, flesh and bone, mm-hmm. Human beings with mm-hmm. all the dignity and respect they deserve, and there's someone in front of them saying, you know, well, you know, they shouldn't have their equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, even the justices were just surprised and appalled at times with some of the arguments that they were producing. And you know, I doubt that some of them could have been more surprised if he'd opened his briefcase and pulled out a tap-dancing squid. It just
mm-hmm. And, you know, another example of what you were saying, Mark, the Dallas Police and Fire Pension is debating whether or not spouses, same-sex spouses, will get the same equal benefits as opposite-sex spouses right now. Well, at one of their meetings that I attended, about a dozen really angry lesbian cops showed up. And it got to the point...
That's not a good picture.
it got to the point... Oh, it was beautiful. I love these women. They were fabulous. Because they were standing there saying, when the Fire and Pension Board was saying, well, let's study this for 6 months. And Scott Griggs, councilman who's been on our show lots of times, Scott said, what's to study? Let's do 1 month. Come back with your report. Lee Kleinman, new council member, stood up, said, I second that. the other members were saying, wait, 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 we need to study more. Scott said, I'm sorry, there's a motion on the floor. and it passed. But these cops were saying, one of them, she was wonderful. She stood up. She pointed at one of those members of that board and said, during the time that we study this, my wife won't have those benefits. Are you willing to put your wife's benefits on hold, too?
Right.
It's a good point.
That's a reasonable point.
It's a great point.
Of course it's a reasonable point.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, she was in tears, though. She said, I've worked for this police department for 30 years.
Right.
Well, that's a very good point, and it brings up, you know, Vic's service and the service of others. I mean, Vic served for 22 and a half years for our country, to serve for the freedom for all. My father served during World War II and was in the reserves in the Korean War, and I actually have a great-great-great-grandfather who fought during the American Revolutionary War, and all of these people are serving both now and past, have served for the freedom of all. And yet those gay and lesbian Americans who have served in the military alongside everyone else have been denied their rights, and they've been denied them too long. And Vic is one, and you know, Governor Perry, with all due respect, when he was asked, what do you tell a gay veteran after that constitutional ban in Texas was passed, what do you tell him? He essentially said, well, you can leave. And that's not what you tell someone who has served for your freedom.
Well, it is if you want to win by an easier margin. Yeah.
Do what?
It is if you want to win by an easier margin in the next election.
Oh, he was absolutely appalling. I have that.
It was disgusting.
Clip of that, and it's terrible.
Why don't we take our break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guests are the plaintiffs in the Texas marriage case. Got it right this time. They're the plaintiffs and the appellees. And they are waiting for a decision from the Fifth Circuit. Will it come down during this show? I think so. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and Lauren will be back with us next week. We're talking about the Texas marriage case. We won it. Then it went to the Fifth Circuit. We're going to win it.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, no,
yes, we are.
We know Scotty, who came into the studio just now. Tell us a little bit about what sitting in the courtroom was like, what your impressions were of the judges.
I was really impressed, actually, by the judges. I've never been in a courtroom for that reason. Well, I mean, who would be, really? But the last time I was even in anywhere near a courtroom was a tour back in 1983, and
your husband's a lawyer. He's never taken you to work.
No.
And I'm not. Yeah, I'm not anyway. A litigator either. So. Yeah.
So that helps. So that's why he's a good lawyer. So. But be that as it may, so sitting there, it was such a small place for such big decisions to come out of. The justices themselves, I'm not sure what I was expecting, but what I got was three people who honestly were listening to what we had to say. And for good or for bad, I know that they were at least listening to us. And that was really, I think, what I was looking for, was just to be heard and just to understand that they are hearing us and not just blowing off what we're saying. They were taking it in.
Okay, so everybody thinks that Higginbotham is the important vote, mm-hmm. that he's the swing vote. What was your impression of him? Now, you only heard the Texas case. You weren't there for the other two, right?
Correct.
Well, we heard... the other one.
We were in an overflow courtroom, and what they did was they rotated the plaintiffs out of the courtroom, and so they could into another one. So
because it was such a small room,
it was a small room. Right. So the we listened in another courtroom to the arguments for Louisiana and Mississippi, and then they all listened to the arguments for for others, just like we did. Listening to him from overhead, it's a little tough, particularly for the Louisiana argument, because the Lambda attorney is female and was very soft-spoken, very effective, very good, but soft-spoken. And so it was tough in the overflow courtroom to hear what she was saying, or at least it was for me. and
well, as was Justice Higginbotham, because
he leaned back in his chair.
He leaned back way, way like this, so you can't actually hear what he's saying very clearly. But
and if somebody wants to see that, it'll be on our podcast.
It was a demonstration.
Well, that's what we had to listen to. So.
And it was kind of crazy, I thought, too, because he would sit up and very close to the mic when he was listening, but when he spoke, he went way back.
Yeah, unless he was irritated, like when he was talking to Texas, he got right in there. So.
Oh, he did. Yes, that's right.
But he,
no missing that.
I mean, it's great as a lawyer to sit in a appellate courtroom to see justice in action. And I'm absolutely convinced that we'll have a 2-1 decision, that we'll have one soon in our favor. And then marriage equality can proceed pretty quickly.
I want to talk to you about the timeline.
Oh, but can I ask this one question?
Go ahead.
Do you think it's possible that it'll be
3-0? No.
It would be amazing. There is a possibility. There's a possibility of everything, and I would love to see that possibility.
I mean, for example, if Judge Graves or Higginbotham shows Judge Smith, and they walk through in their discussions and their conferences, that Baker v. Nelson is gone. It was ruled unconstitutional in Windsor. Do you think that could influence him?
You would do it.
I would say, Patty, that at the beginning of the Louisiana argument, Nicole and I were passing notes, and we actually were sitting there showing three fingers, thinking that we had, this is, halfway into that argument, thinking, we're going to have a 3-0 decision in our favor.
And Nicole's an attorney.
Nicole's an attorney.
And passing notes across the other two of us.
We didn't.
We were like translators from English to English.
Yeah, it was quite interesting. But, I mean, after the halfway point, we went back to 2-1 signals.
Yeah.
And we've never varied from that. That doesn't mean that Smith can't come around and that what you're positing might happen. It's just there was nothing that he, either in his questions or his comments, and then when we were in the Texas hearing, in his body language that seemed to indicate that we would get a 3-0.
And you know, I read a number of his other decisions, and I don't think he's going to, he has a history of being way out there.
Well,
stick
it would be
in
good
the mud.
To see 3-0, but I'll take 2-1.
So what was your impression of him? Did he have any insightful questions?
Well, I think his questions are all valid. I think you shouldn't. If the justices did not ask about Baker v. Nelson, I think something would be amiss.
And explain what Baker v. Nelson is.
Baker v. Nelson was a denial of an appeal from a Minnesota case in 1972 to the U.S. Supreme Court. Minnesota had said that there was no right to marriage brought by two plaintiffs, two men. And that case, they then appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, in a very one-sentence response denying cert, said there was no fundamental right involved. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the essence of what it said. And so,
and we're talking about same-sex marriage. 1972.
Well.
Marriage equality, we should say.
Well.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a fair question for him to ask. I'm with Vic on this. I think all three of the judges, whatever decision we get, whether it's 3-0 in our favor, 2-1 in our favor,
or 1-2 else.
Or something else not in our favor, I will. I believe that they listen to all the arguments, and I think that they are going to apply the law as they see it, and have given us a fair hearing, and we'll see how that comes. Now, I'm very optimistic that we're going to win. I would say I'm 80 to 85%, or maybe 90% optimistic that we're going to win. But if we don't, and if it's on some narrow basis, which I think it would be, and probably some rationale of Baker v. Nelson, if we don't prevail, I don't think it's because they didn't listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's interesting to me is right after the Fifth Circuit, where they were so picky about cameras and recording devices,
oh my goodness,
phones and all of that, I saw on C-SPAN the Ninth Circuit broadcast theirs.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it's Louisiana.
Well, true.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, because nobody in the courtroom was taking photos of anything, thank goodness.
That's
for
that. Right.
Then how did the quality Texas get a photo?
I saw a photo of you two with Nicole and Cleo.
Yeah, how did you get that picture in the courtroom?
Magic.
Well,
we had a crystal ball.
It's in the overflow courtroom, not in the main courtroom.
Yeah. Okay. That was very cool.
Yeah,
and we were
scarier.
You have to remember, in the overflow courtroom, we were in the overflow courtroom by 8 o'clock in the morning or 7:45, something like that. Mm-hmm. So we were there for at least an hour before anything began, and really before there was anyone else even in that courtroom. So that's why we were able to have a photo in the overflow.
Now, Vic, for the story that we did in Dallas Voice this week, I spoke to you, and you gave me some of what you thought.
Mark.
I did not talk to you, Vic. I talked to Mark.
You talked to the defendant.
I talked to the no. I talked to the plaintiff. I'm almost positive I talked to the plaintiff. But one of the things we talked about was the timeline a little bit, and the official timeline. The only thing the Supreme Court printed was that by, I don't know the exact dates, but by mid-February, your side needs to submit its briefs. About a month later, the states need to submit their briefs, and then you can reply to the briefs by the middle of April.
You're talking about on the Sixth Circuit appeal?
On the Sixth Circuit appeal. When I say you, I'm talking about you in the general sense of...
people that are
That's
people.
All y'all.
Everybody.
That's all y'all.
Everybody who has won or lost a marriage case.
Our police status, I guess.
You know, I haven't seen that, so I really can't comment on at the Supreme Court level. I know they haven't scheduled a hearing yet. It was my understanding, and I could be wrong, but they haven't yet set the timing for when the briefs are due.
No, they have the timing for the briefs.
Okay.
And that's it. Okay. After that, we don't know.
After that, we don't know. All right, we'll see. And so that's, I didn't know that. So
I have it here.
And after that, you really don't know, because they could take as long as they want. They could even hold it over the next term. So there's no...
And that's what I wanted to talk about. Normally, like Windsor and Lawrence, those cases were heard in April. They decided the end of June. There's still timing to hear at the end of April, mm-hmm. because the briefs are due mid-April, and they can decide by the end of June. But the court doesn't have to do that, does it?
No, it does not.
What are some of the other things it could do?
Well, it could have the hearing, schedule the hearing for next October during the next term. I mean, that's not likely. I do think the Supreme Court believes in the dignity for gays and lesbians in terms of the right to marry, or at least the majority. And I do believe that that's the reason why they denied cert in October, because that actually gave marriage equality sooner in all those different states. Plus, it gave a signal, really, of where the Supreme Court stood on this, mm-hmm. particularly after Windsor, that those decisions were the correct interpretations of Windsor, that it was a violation of due process and it was a violation of equal protection not to grant same-sex marriages. So I think that they will hear it this term, and they will render a decision this term. It is a possibility that they won't, but I think that's a remote possibility.
Mm-hmm. And it's quite possible we could have the trifecta. June 26, 2003, Lawrence v. Texas. June 26, 2013, U.S. v. Windsor. June 26, 2015? Mm-hmm. June 26 could be our new pride. Our new Stonewall.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, uprising. You
Mark
know?
And Vic, the
gay anniversary.
I think
U.S.
I hadn't thought of that. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
is that what the case is called? Mark and Vic? V.U.S.?
Here's the questions. They're going to give the two questions the Supreme Court has asked. Does the 14th Amendment require permitting same-sex marriage? They're allotting a 90-minute argument for that. And then, or to recognize a marriage from another state, which is 60 minutes. And they also have briefs are due. Plaintiffs' briefs are due February 27th, which is going to be coming right up. States' briefs are due March 27th. And reply briefs are due April 17th. Mm-hmm. So,
which leaves six more days after that the Supreme Court will still hear cases this session.
Right. Now, I was going to say, what I've heard is what, and Vic and I are putting on our calendar, is that it's 27th, 28th, or 29th of April are the days potentially for mm-hmm. the hearing before the Supreme Court. And we want to go up. I don't know whether we're going to be able to get in, because it's a long line, and we'll have to stay up all night.
But
it won't be the first time that we've. So, we're very interested in being able to attend that hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fortunately, they don't broadcast those either.
Yeah, they don't. We're apparently video them.
Right.
And the reason that you're saying those last 3 days is that the three of the days are immediately after those briefs are due. It doesn't give them a chance to even read them. Mm-hmm. So it would probably be the last week of April.
Mm-hmm.
How likely is it, and I'm asking you this as an attorney, I realize you're not this type of attorney, how likely is it, or do you know how often the Supreme Court schedules to hear something and then doesn't schedule it till the next fall?
It's a good question, and I don't know the answer.
Oh, okay.
I've not looked.
Because I can't think of an example of that. In a big case.
You're asking a corporate lawyer. If you want to know how to incorporate a company, I can help you.
Mm-hmm.
You're one of those.
He's one of those. One of those.
I used to ask some of our guests who are attorneys, "Are you a lawyer or an attorney?" And I got
your blood pressures.
Right.
Once the Supreme Court rules, assuming in our favor, anywhere from 5-4 to 7-2, because we know 2 are definitely voting against us. Mm-hmm. We're pretty sure 5 are with us.
Well, 1 will vote against us, and the other will just do whatever he does. It's just my opinion.
Right. And that one, who we think will vote against us, was meeting with anti-gay activists this week.
Yep.
Just to show how neutral he is.
Impartial hearing.
But once they issue their ruling, how fast do you think we'll have marriage in the other 14 states?
Very fast. I mean, if a decision isn't issued out of the Fifth Circuit before then, once the Supreme Court issues a decision, the Fifth Circuit will clearly then immediately issue a decision on our case within days. And then marriage equality will come to Texas. So it is very quick, and it's very likely also that some clerks in some areas of Texas will not wait for the Fifth Circuit to rule. They will go ahead and start allowing marriages based upon
the Supreme Court.
You know, I have a question. So we have the 14 states, I think it is, without gay marriage, and if the Supreme Court makes their ruling, will the states that don't have a case for someone have to have a case in order to?
No. Because they all have cases, first of all, but once the Supreme Court rules that you do have a right to it, you don't have to then sue for it.
Okay.
Now, we have a bet running on Lambda Weekly here, mm-hmm, that it's our supposition that Texas will do everything it can to be number 50.
Now, Mark, you don't think so, though,
because
when we were talking about this during the week, you said you thought that the Fifth Circuit will issue a ruling, and then tell us what you plan to do once we have the ruling.
Well, we think the Fifth Circuit will rule in our favor. Amongst the plaintiffs and attorneys, we actually have a pool betting on when that decision is going to come down. I'm not going to give those dates because I don't want
I'm
the
quite
Fifth Circuit
the 17th
to
of February.
Just your,
it wouldn't
yeah,
decide
I don't
on the
want
judges.
The Fifth Circuit to you know to mess up my day. My pick.
But
I will say the only thing I'll say is Cleo's out of the running.
So she thought there'd be a ruling immediately.
She thought yesterday.
Now, yeah.
Well, not yesterday. Friday.
Yeah.
I think that the Fifth Circuit will rule fairly quickly, and that once it does, then we will immediately proceed to the district court to ask them to lift the stay. I believe the district court will lift the stay very quickly.
You're talking about Judge Garcia.
Judge Garcia. Mm-hmm.
In San Antonio.
Yes.
Right,
yeah. And that with that stay lifted, I think Texas would, of course, appeal to the Fifth Circuit. I don't think the Fifth Circuit would reimpose the stay, but even if they did, we would then appeal that to the Supreme Court, and I think the Supreme Court would let us proceed as they have in every other state. So that's so I actually have been predicting we'll have marriage equality sometime in February, And
like around the 17th.
Yeah.
Could it be somebody's birthday?
Yeah. Not to pick a day in particular.
And Neil has picked Easter. I mean, not. That's what he's publicly said. That's not the day he picked in our
pool.
When the policy comes back from the dead.
Okay, so we might have marriage around by Easter. Almost certainly have it this summer. They could wait till October and then not rule till next January at the outside. What are your marriage plans?
Well, to get married.
Yeah.
After all this,
are you driving around with a bottle of champagne and some confetti in your cars? Like at any moment it could strike.
That is an open container law, so we have to.
No. You know.
For the confetti.
Right.
I guess we'll be as surprised as everyone else whenever it comes down, when the Fifth Circuit decision comes down. You know, our plan is we were contemplating an October or November wedding. We've actually been in contact with various places about having our wedding and reception there, either in Dallas or even maybe even in Austin. We, it's tough to book it. You know, these places are now being booked up,
right?
And so you have to think, well, do I put down a deposit and take it now, or do I take, you know?
On the outside chance that we don't have a decision yet.
Right, and if they hold over, then we're kind of pushing on our deposit. So.
Well, and then we're also trying to plan our honeymoon at the same time in conjunction with the wedding. And
maybe we can get them to return our deposit as part of the contract.
Right. I don't think they'll
find a lawyer
to
help me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder if he can.
Thank you very much for being here. We are completely out of time.
Thank you.
Mark Ferris and Dick Holmes, the plaintiffs in the Texas marriage case.
I think that's awesome.
Patty, we'll be back. It's the week after you're. No, the week after I'm gone. Then you're gone. Okay,
yes.
But next week we're both here.
We're both here.
Candy Markham will be here with us next week. And that's about it for us on Lambda Weekly. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.